Murder Madness by Murray Leinster. Chapter 1. The engines of the Almirante Gomez were going dead slow. Away up beside her monster funnels, her siren blew dismally. Woo! And was silent for the regulation period, and blew desolately again into the clinging gray mist that ringed her all about. Her decks were wet and glistening. Droplets of water stood upon the deck stanchions, and dripped from the outer edge of the roof above the promenade deck. A thin, swirling fog lay soggily upon the water, and the big steamer went dead slow upon her course, sending dismal and depressing blasts from her horn from time to time. It was barely possible to see from one side of the ship to the other. It was surely impossible to see the bow from a point half astern. Charlie Bell went forward along the promenade deck. He passed Senor Ortiz, ex-minister of the Interior of the Argentine Republic. Ortiz bowed to him punctiliously, but Bell had a sudden impression that the Argentine's face was gray and ghastly. He checked himself and looked back. The little man was climbing the companion ladder toward the wireless room. Bell slipped on toward the bow. He did not want to give an impression of furtiveness, but the Almirante Gomez was 12 days out of New York, and Bell was still entirely ignorant of why he was on board. He had been called into the office of his chief in the State Department and told curtly that his request for leave of absence had been granted, and Bell had not asked for a leave of absence. But at just that moment he saw a rubber band on the desk of his immediate superior, a fairly thick rubber band which had been tied into a certain intricate knot. And Bell had kept quiet. He went to his apartment, found his bags packed, and tickets to Rio via the Almirante Gomez in an envelope on his dressing table, and went out and caught a train to the ship. And that was all he knew. The siren up above blared dolefully into the fog. It was damp and soggy and depressing. The other passengers were under cover, and the decks seemed to be deserted. From the salon came the sound of music. Bell pulled up the collar of his light topcoat about his throat and strolled on toward the bow. He faced a row of steamer chairs. There was a figure curled up in one of them. Paula Canalejas, muffled up against the dampness and staring somberly out into the mist. Bell had met her in Washington and liked her a great deal, but he swore softly at the sight of her in his way. The afternoon before, he had seen a stoker on the Almirante Gomez pick up a bit of rope and absently tie knots in it while he exchanged Rabelaisian humor with his fellows. He had not looked at Bell at all, but the knots he tied were the same that Bell had last seen tied in a rubber band on the desk in the State Department in Washington, and Bell knew a recognition signal when he saw one. The stoker would be off watch just now, and by all the rules of reason, he ought to be out there on the forecastle, waiting for Bell to turn up and receive instructions. But Bell paused, lit a cigarette carefully, and strolled forward. "Mr. Bell?" He stopped and beamed fatuitously at her. It would have been logical for him to fall in love with her, and it is always desirable to seem logical. He had striven painstakingly to give the impression that he had fallen in love with her, and then had striven even more painstakingly to keep from doing it. "Hello," he said in bland surprise. "What are you doing out on deck?" Brown eyes regarded him speculatively. "Thinking," she said succinctly, "about you, Mr. Bell." Bell beamed. "Thinking," he confided, "is usually a bad habit, especially in a girl. But if you must think, I approve of your choice of subjects. What were you thinking about me?" The brown eyes regarded him still more speculatively. "I was wondering," said Paula, glancing to either side, "I was wondering if you happened to be,